Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Well, in today's Reasonable Doubt, we get into lots of stuff. Man, we get into Flynn, we get into China, we get into the NBA, we get into everything. But first, I'll tell you, on Al-Baghdadi, we get into everything. First, I'll tell you about Limetown. Facebook Watch presents Limetown, a new show that follows the mysterious disappearance of over 300 people from a small town in Tennessee. It's based on the number one podcast on iTunes and stars Jessica Biel. Oh, man, she is a great actress and easy on the eyes as well. Limetown is a sophisticated and suspenseful story that asks the question, how can 326 people just disappear? And you can stream it now only on Facebook Watch.
10 years ago, one man set sail.
But I'm going to get guests in here. I'll get a studio, and we will create something together.
One man, with a microphone in hand, ranted.
No nailing schedule, no inspector, no nothing. Now,
nothing!
Nothing!
Debated.
I don't want to have a sociological debate.
Sure,
I want
why
to deal
would
with
you?
Real.
Have, no.
No, here's why.
Why would you want to do that? Because a person from the Times wouldn't write good things about you if
God.
You did that.
No, no, that's not the case.
And taught the world how to properly measure a penis.
From the center of the anus to just beyond the tip.
Now, it's time to commemorate a decade. Introducing the official 10 Years of ACS Scrapbook. Featuring never-before-seen photos and stories from behind the scenes at ACS, the early days of the podcast, and favorite memories from all your favorite guests. Signed by the entire ACS crew and every host on the network, this $99 scrapbook is limited to only 300 copies. Head to CorollaDrinks.com today to get a copy of your own or a gift for the holidays. Hurry, we will sell out. This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate, get on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus in New York City.
New York City, just been here for a day or two. Actually, I think you were landing in Utah as I was leaving Utah to come to New York.
Oh, man.
How was Utah, by the way?
I was going to say ships in the night, but many people out there aren't fans of yours or mine, and they would say shits in the night. We just
did you not go
each other.
Over well in Utah?
I went over gangbusters in Utah. I did 4 sold-out shows, and the audience was great, and the Uber drivers in Utah. I think if you picked a state for the best Uber drivers, Utah would have to be at the top. Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, Mike and I we were in Miami 3 weeks earlier. We got some chick. For some like Cuban chick who was like 19, she didn't know where she was. Like we couldn't find a cruise ship. The cruise ship's 900 feet long. You can see it from outer space. We couldn't find the stupid thing. Then you go to Utah, and I got a 70-year-old guy's got pomade in his hair, and he's wearing a vest. And
you know, I think that guy drove me to the jail once. Very a very outgoing guy. He's got the pomade. He's probably 70. I forget the car he was in. It was an SUV.
It was a Ford Flex, which basically is an SUV van. And
yeah, exactly.
He had all the amenities.
Same guy.
He had the water. He had the Purell. He had the mints. He had everything in
what
the back.
Is he? I forget. He even gives you something as you're leaving. He gives you like mints or something as you're leaving the ride.
Listen,
he was very hospitable.
He had classical music playing. It was awesome. All right. So, so many cases to get into. You want to start with Flynn. You want Turkey. You want the Al-Baghdadi.
You know,
what do you want?
It's very interesting. By the way, I saw Jimmy's mashup of Obama opining on or announcing Bin Laden being killed.
Yes.
And he did a mashup with Trump's, which is, I don't know, what is it, about a minute?
Yes.
And it is incredibly funny.
It made me laugh.
He really did a good job, right?
It made me laugh. Gary can find it. We'll play it at some point.
Very good. So this is where I have a couple of things. There is now a filing that came out as we're recording this. Is that the proper term, recording, taping, whatever. As we're talking, I just read a filing by the new Flynn's, General Flynn's new lawyer that has been on a jihad over the independent counsel or special counsel, I should say, prosecution of Flynn, and has now filed a 37-page motion to have basically hold the government accountable for what she, the lawyer, has assembled as kind of hijinks, if you will, in getting him to plead and in getting him to not only plead, but for the predicate acts of making the 1001 false statements in the first place. And Judge Sullivan, who was none too happy with Flynn, ended up, once this was filed, kicking over the sentencing for, I think, another month. And remember, this was when he was going to first be sentenced. Flynn, with his previous lawyer, Judge Sullivan, had said, you better come back or put over the sentencing, because I'm inclined to give you significant jail time and not follow the special counsel's recommendation of no jail time. So what a turn of events that's been. And it was reported as well that one of the gentlemen who was working, although he claims he had an informal relationship, was the former CIA operative slash director or intelligence person, Woosley, who was working with Flynn, who was apparently trying to get a $10 million contract for a disinformation campaign on Gulen, who is the cleric who Erdogan wants extradited from the U.S. This thing gets deeper and deeper by the minute. And now you've got Erdogan under the gun in Congress because Trump removed the sanctions that he had imposed just recently. And now Congress, believe it or not, talk about all things coming back to being an armo, are entertaining the House resolution now to recognize the Armenian genocide to tweak back Erdogan at this point, because that's one of the things that literally drives him crazy.
Well, can we let's slow down with Flynn a little and figure it out. Flynn was a highly decorated veteran. I don't know if he was a colonel or a general. But
I think he was a general. Some kind of a general light.
Experienced guy. He was called in to have a conversation with some FBI guys, I guess, or CIA guys.
He was a lieutenant general.
Lieutenant general. They don't record these conversations, which is, I don't know. What year is it?
I've never understood this because it gives guys like me in cross-examination, I mean, a sandbox to play in. It's like, well, wait a second. Do you have a phone on you? Yes. Do your phone, you know how to record on your phone? Yeah. So even if the government couldn't afford a tape recorder or some digital recorder, you couldn't use your phone to record this conversation?
Right. So I don't know why they don't. And now we have to kind of speculate as to what somebody said in a conversation.
Well, I've made the argument. I've actually used jury instructions to make the argument that when they have the ability to record it and they don't record it, and that is an oral either admission or confession that's made outside of court, that should be distrusted because if you've got the capability to do it, why aren't you doing it?
It's kind of like when the cop didn't turn his vest cam on and says, but I didn't turn on my camera, but just believe me, I'll tell you what happened.
Yeah. And why would I lie? That's always my favorite. Why would this guy put his career on the line? How many times they teach this at prosecutor 101 intro. First, you talk about circumstantial evidence as being a little kid who's got crumbs in the kitchen and the cookies are gone, or there's wet footprints by a pool and he's all wet. And that means he was swimming. The other one is, why would the cop lie? Why would a cop who's got a reputation and went through boot camp and the academy, why would he get up here, ladies and gentlemen, jeopardize everything and lie?
Well, from what I've learned, sadly, as an adult and living with a woman, I don't know that they know they're lying. I don't know. I hear people tell me stuff on an almost daily basis that I don't know if they believe it or not. I think they do believe this is how it went down some of the time. Anyone who's ever lived with any woman for any length of time will tell you things that are patently false and borderline insane that they believe 100% went down that way.
And I think Paulette would say Mark comes home and expects me to believe this stuff, and I don't know that he really believes it. So
Flynn gets brought in. Flynn gets questioned. He thinks he's having a conversation, I guess, but he doesn't have counsel there, right?
Right.
And
exactly.
So he's not. And for anyone listening, don't go in and have that conversation without a lawyering up, right?
Well, remember that commercial that went. Well, actually, it was a video that went viral, and I think somebody locally in L.A. has now adopted it as their mantra, which is when the cops come over and want to talk to you, you've only got one thing to tell them, and that's shut the fuck up. And that's what you need to do. I always tell them when they ask you something, you just know four words. I want my lawyer.
So,
period.
So Flynn started this conversation, and this conversation – in the conversation, what did they find out? What are they? They're getting Flynn for lying, essentially, right?
Yeah, and it's all revolves around whether or not there was the prosecution's theory is that there was that Turkey was funneling money through a cutout somewhere in Europe, and that was a pretext or a conduit for lobbying to get the cleric who lives in Pennsylvania extradited because Erdogan thinks that person has a connection to the civil unrest / attempted coup that he was able to survive. And that's been kind of his, singular focus for the last couple of years, I guess almost 3 years, is getting Gulen extradited back to Turkey, where everybody knows first thing will happen is Erdogan will go full Khashoggi on him, and that'll be the end of that. So far, the State Department has and the Department of Justice has not knuckled under on that in any way, shape, or form.
What are they accusing Flynn of?
Flynn is what pled to. I mean, what he was accused of is tough because a lot of that material, both in the Mueller report and in the filings so far in front of Judge Sullivan, have been redacted. But it looks like they were saying that he was lying about, number one, the source of the money, whether or not he knew he was working for Turkey as a foreign agent. And almost precisely what this 37-page motion that Sidney Powell just filed was all of the connections to the lobbying contract that was going on and things of that nature. Interestingly now, one of the sanctions components that the Congress literally this week is considering is that Erdogan would have to disclose his net worth in order to free up or avoid all of these sanctions. A number of the sanctions are directed, just like the Russian sanctions, to people in his inner circle and to his extended family. So it's a very interesting kind of a pushback from Congress, and to some degree bipartisan pushback to Congress from Congress. So this is not just the Democrats carrying the water on this bill. And like I said, one of the hot button issues with Erdogan is having the U.S. government recognize April 24th as a commemoration of the genocide of the 1.5 million Armenians.
I'm going to tease a question for you, and it's one you're going to have to ponder a little bit because there isn't really an answer. There's no precedent and nothing to look up. But I'll make this statement, and then you tell me what you think of it, and I'll tease it before I hit my spot. As it appears to me, as I start looking at the NBA in China and, you know, Disney in China and this sort of, you know, NBA pulling out of an all-star game because there wasn't a third bathroom in Charlotte or whatever it was, and Disney was not going to film in Atlanta because of abortion rights or laws or whatever, but everyone is completely fine with China, morally fine. The same entities are morally fine with China. They're just not morally fine with North Carolina. All right, think about that and think about this. Then you think about Flynn and you think about Hunter Biden and you start to realize, I think we don't live in a corrupt country. We're not a narco state, and we don't do what they do in Russia and many other regimes and many other countries. But we still like money. So basically what I think is going on around the world is we're not inherently bad. We do love money. We're never going to create gulags in this country. But if a country who has gulags would like to give us money, that we're okay with. So we're not really morally bankrupt. We just like money a lot. And while we're not corrupt ourselves, we do love money more than we love judging corrupt nations on both sides of the aisle. Tell me what you think of that. First, I'll tell you about 8sleep.com. Every podcast has mattress ads. Sure. There's thousands of them, but only one uses technology and temperature to give you the deepest sleep. Oh, 8sleep is so good. My childhood could have been a 5 if I had 8sleep.
It's true, though. Do you sleep on it? Unbelievable.
Yes, you set the temperature. You set it for your side. The wife sets it for her side. It's the first bed to combine dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. Look, we've all... I did it. I was on a cruise ship a few weeks ago. The air conditioning was out my cabin. I woke up in the middle of the night. I was covered with sweat. I was tossing and turning. You can't get a good night's sleep if your temperature's not right. So there's obviously research shows a link between the sleep and your performance and how the temperature affects your sleep. Everyone knows that. So use the pod. Customers fall asleep faster, toss and turn 25% less, and have a 17% increase in deep sleep. And right now, you get $150 off and free shipping at 8sleep.com/doubt. E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/doubt. So my last statement,
let me tell you, since it's not more, because I've struggled with this for a variety of reasons in the last couple of weeks, and when the NBA was taking a position. In fact, I ran into Adam Silver in Utah when I was there last week. I forget why he was there, probably for a game, but he had made the statement that China, or indicated that China, had asked that Morley, who's the GM for the Rockets, be fired. And he said, we're not even going to discipline him or tell him not to do this. And then there was much hullabaloo about LeBron's reaction and Steve Kerr's reaction, who are generally, both guys are generally ones who will comment on anything that's going on, you know, social justice wise. And then I was thinking about precisely what you were saying, because it hit close to home for a variety of reasons. And the justification that you hear, and this is what I was struggling with, is, well, I will comment on what I know in the U.S. because that's my home, but I don't want to comment on something that I don't know enough about. And that's not really true. That falls apart, because obviously there are people talking about the Palestinians, or people talking about, or did talk about in years gone by about South Africa and apartheid. There are people talking, as you may kind of referred to, the gulags that originally was the Soviet Union and Alexander Solzhenitsyn. So this idea that
Mark,
somehow
let me interrupt. The same group, and I don't mean LeBron James, but I mean the same group in general, if anyone's been around long enough and remembers the mid and later 80s, it was nonstop talk about apartheid, and Hollywood was all up in it, and Hollywood was making anti-apartheid movies, and there was a popular song on K-Rock called Ain't Gonna Play Sun City, or Free Nelson Mandela. Was a song that was popular on K, and there was like hashtag before there was hashtag Ain't Gonna Play Sun City, which was a big resort in South Africa. So there are plenty of comments about things that are going on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's precisely why and China is such a big player economically. And so it does expose kind of this, okay, if you're going to be socially conscious here in this area, and you're going to talk about this, and you're going to say, no, I'm not going to go beyond the four corners, if you will, of the U.S., that doesn't seem to me to be a consistent position. It's a tough position to take, because then what do? I mean, you can't talk about slaughters or chemical weapons being used by Assad in Syria against children, and at the same time we're not going to talk about China and what China may be doing. Can't talk about trying to promote democracy or freedom in other areas of the world and then say, yeah, but Hong Kong, I don't know enough about it. So it's a very nettlesome issue when money is involved. I mean, because let's call it for what it is. China is an immense market, an incredible market. I mean, one of the reasons that we're involved in these trade wars and why farmers are having to get billions in subsidies is because when we engage in tariffs against China, it has a legitimate, immediate and consequential impact in the U.S. So it's a very tough position to kind of pull back and say, I don't know enough.
You know, yeah, what I mean? Well, again, South Africa offered nothing to Hollywood or the NBA, so everyone had a million thoughts about South Africa because they weren't players economically. China offers everything to the NBA and Hollywood, so they have zero thoughts about China.
You take a look at that league, and the NBA has, and I think rightfully so to some degree, compared to the NFL, which I've been embroiled with for the last couple of years, obviously, the NBA takes a more progressive stand on social issues, obviously, than the NFL does. Although now the NFL's got Jay-Z as their cutout or their stand-in for social justice issues. But there is, you understand why people are crowing about what's happening in the NBA vis-a-vis China, because it does seem to be hypocritical.
All right. So my statement in a China side, because we could be talking about Ukraine or anywhere, we are not a corrupt country or civilization, but we do like money. So as long as somebody else kind of does the dirty work, we'll be in business with them.
Well, and you know, it's interesting when you say we're not corrupt. What we don't like hypocrisy as a country. We don't like corruption. We don't want to be a banana republic. But part of the left's problem with what Trump is accused of doing in the impeachment saga is trying to trade a domestic political favor in violation of a couple of 18 USC codes, including wire fraud, in trade for aid that was appropriated by Congress. And people say, well, you know, we're starting to become like a third world. You know, you hear the term banana republic. I don't even know if you can say banana republic anymore, because that probably is derogatory in some sense or doesn't violate somebody's safe space. But that it's an interesting dilemma, because clearly nobody would be, I don't think, and I think this is your point, who's going to be reticent about criticizing China if China had no market, if China had no money, who was going to be reticent about supporting people in Hong Kong? I mean, you don't see anybody. You saw roughly the same time in real time the protests in Lebanon. I didn't see that as a controversial for people to support that. There were at least 1.5 million to 2 million people in the streets in Lebanon.
Let's go micro and macro. Look how many people look the other way for Harvey Weinstein for all those years. Because in a way, he's a big fat Jewish China living in Hollywood, which is that guy can provide work for me. He can provide millions of dollars for a company. He is a revenue. Like, if that guy is not a producer and not as big a producer as he is and not as big a donator as he is to political causes and provider of work, think how fast that someone would have blown a whistle on that guy. I mean, you have NBC crushing stories on that guy because he's a provider and because of what he does. So in a weird way, he is a little sort of drop of China in the United States. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think what you're pointing to is that when somebody is, the old expression, don't bite the hand that feeds you, if there is an economic interest, people are, it's one of the reasons that the at least when we were studying isms in school, that they used to say that socialism or communism was always doomed to failure, because at base, most people are driven by economic motivations, and economic motivations can trump, pun intended, all other considerations, then something that asks for or seems to impute, where you're supposed to have idealistic or altruistic motivations at all time, that it's very tough to do in when there are economic considerations.
Well,
so how do you always say I'm going to do the right thing if you've got an economic consideration?
Well, again, just how fast would Harvey Weinstein be Me Too'd if he didn't have the kind of juice that he has and the kind of money that he could provide for others versus how far this guy got down the road? I mean, he literally had news agencies squashing stories about him because of the juice. So that's how we're wired, for better or for worse. You know what I mean? Like,
it's interesting. And I think the part of the reason that the left loved the idea of Rachel Maddow last week taking it to NBC is because she was doing something that bites the hand that feeds her, so to speak. And we kind of like it when we see that. So she got quite a bit of kudos for doing that.
It seems intellectually honest, and it is intellectually honest, and those people should be praised. Rachel Maddow, that is. All right, I'm going to tease
that. I wanted to do a special spot for LegalZoom, and let me tell you why. They've been a sponsor for a long time, and this past week, Paulette's baby brother, who's worked for LegalZoom for more than a decade, passed away rather tragically and unexpectedly. And LegalZoom did everything possible to take care of him and actually underwrote his memorial service this past week. And special kudos for me. They showed real class in a time when his family needed it. And I'm going to give them a shout out for that. Running your own business isn't easy. Get help with the day-to-day challenges. They walk the walk, they talk the talk. Over the past 18 years, LegalZoom helped more than 2 million business owners get started. And every entrepreneur knows getting started is, right, Adam, just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant struggle, and that's what LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys and tax professionals can help you with. They'll give you advice on trademarks, tax law changes, reviewing contracts, and you'll save money by avoiding the hourly fee. Since LegalZoom is not a law firm, don't get distracted by legal hurdles and business questions as the year winds down. LegalZoom, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Go to LegalZoom.com today and find out all the different ways they can help your business. And don't forget to enter the promo code DOUBT in the box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com, promo code DOUBT. LegalZoom, where life meets legal.
Paulette's brother was named Paul, right?
Correct.
There must have been,
interestingly.
There must have been a father or a grandfather. There must have been a name in her family.
Well, you know, I told Paulette, I noticed at the funeral, and it had not occurred to me, he passed away on October 21st. His name was Paul Kasabian. My father's name was Paul, and he passed away on October 21st. And I told Paulette, next October 21st and going forward, you might want to hunker down in the basement and not be anywhere near anything that could do you any harm, because October 21st, and ironically, my dad died 60 years to the day that my sister died, also on October 21st. So the day after my brother Matt's birthday, I don't know if it's just a massive coincidence in the universe or if it's trying to tell me something else.
Was there a Paul? Was that a family name? I mean, what I'm saying is,
in our Armenian community, Paul, because of the, you know, Armenians were the first Christian nation in about 303 AD. And so we're very close to the apostles, and the names, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, the Apostle Paul, all were names that Armenians over the years at least were translated from the Armenian and are common names in the Armenian community. Now you just know your Shants and your Hagops and your Aras and Haik,
but
and Rafis. But in the day, there was a lot of my generation, my ilk, post-genocide, was you'd find a lot of Pauls and Marks.
Al-Baghdadi. So
Al-Baghdadi, tell me, I want to hear your take on this. Bigger deal or a lesser deal than Osama bin Laden?
I have no idea how deep these guys roll. I know at some point they become figureheads, but because they have to go to a new safe house every night, they're not as involved with the day-to-day. You know what I mean? So
right. Symbolically to me, there's no comparison. This guy was not of anywhere near the fame and infamy, properly infamy, that Osama bin Laden was. Bin Laden was, that guy was on a par with Saddam Hussein in terms of the infamy.
Yeah, but Osama bin Laden could have just had a better publicist. Like, it doesn't mean that Al-Baghdadi wasn't more dangerous.
Right. If you're going to measure the terror and the murderous, vile kind of the acts that they do, I mean, some of the you could say a lot of what ISIS did increased terror exponentially from 9/11. I don't know. I mean, it's all gradations of evil, so it's tough to say.
Right.
But clearly, Osama bin Laden, at least in my mind, living in real time through that and through this, seems to have had a bigger terrorist footprint.
Well, if you just ask 1,000 Americans whose name they recognize, it'd be overwhelmingly Osama bin Laden versus Al-Baghdadi. But I want to get into Pelosi and Schiff not being told. I want to get into this notion that Putin was told and they weren't told. I've heard some theories. I don't know if you have.
I want to hear your theories, because I thought it was interesting. Now, the argument that I heard is that Putin was told because there was going to be a flyover over Russian patrolled space, which does that sound plausible? Yeah, to somebody, I'm not doing special ops missions, but if you're doing a special ops mission, you're going over somebody's space, I would think you'd want to give them a heads up that you're coming over.
Yeah, that sounded very plausible. And who knows whether that's the reason or not? As you and I know, no one will ever really know the reason. We just need a plausible reason, and this is totally plausible.
As somebody who deals with the United States government on a daily basis and is told one thing one day and then discovers that it was categorically untrue 3 days later, I tend to take most of the stuff with a rather cynical or jaundiced eye.
Yeah, I get it. It's just, if somebody is crying foul, this is an answer. There's Russian controlled airspace.
Does it sound plausible? Yeah, it sounds plausible.
Makes sense.
Is it true? I have no idea. I can't vouch for it. But I don't. The idea that Pelosi and that she is what they call the Gang of Eight, which is the four and four, I believe, from the House and the Senate on the intelligence committees and the one other committee, and that they are supposed to be read into these kinds of operations.
Right. And that's Pelosi. And I'm not sure where Schiff rolls
in. She's
this.
The speaker, and Schiff rolls in because I think he's on the chair on the House committee.
So I'm also assume now I think Trump. I think Trump has two thoughts. I think he thinks everything leaks, which it seems to. And I also think he thinks that he's going to be sabotaged at every turn. I believe him, and I believe the thought that at this point, Pelosi and the left would rather see Trump fail than this country succeed. Everyone makes a big deal out of that statement. I've not seen anything to indicate anything else. I think they would they'd love the economy to tank right before the election. Would they or would they not?
I think Bill Maher already said it.
Yeah.
Maher said it on the show.
Well, I'm
not going to dispute that, but I have a different analysis.
I want to hear about it. Yes.
I have not worked for him. I don't think I've even been in litigation with him. I do know several of the law firms and lawyers that he uses or has used, Trump. And I will tell you, he strikes me as a not so atypical litigant, a guy who litigates and takes the litigation seriously in this sense. There are people who take the position that if you sue me or if you attack me in litigation, that it's a war. They consider it like a battle. And you don't just, you know, call time out to sing Kumbaya. So I get that mentality that he's and by the way, impeachment is a legal process that is trained at him in order to take him out, impeach him and remove him. So I understand from his standpoint, why in the heck would I trust or take a timeout when these guys are trying to destroy me? I get that. At the same time, Adam would tell you that, this is the protocol. I've got oversight. You're getting in the way of the oversight. What you've done was a crime, and I've got a duty to pursue that. Part of the other kinds of things that are going on surrounding impeachment, which are interesting, is the Republicans complaining that it's being done in secret. Well, that's fascinating to me because the House is basically the people who bring the charges, not unlike a grand jury. A grand jury indicts, and then you get to have a trial, and the trial here would be with the Senate. Well, guess what? The grand jury, you don't get a lawyer in the grand jury. You don't get to sit in the grand jury. If you're being indicted, you don't know anything that's happening, especially if they're doing it in the traditional way. And there's rules on that, Rule 6E in the criminal process. So, and when you see Lindsey Graham, who drives me crazy, I don't know what is going on with Lindsey Graham. The consistency, somebody once said the consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. If you take everything he said in 1998 and 1999 and then contrast it with what he's going through now and his contortions now, I just don't get it. I mean, I don't understand what he's doing. And it's almost like he defaults to a position that he knows is right, and then in a day they do a course correction to get him to go in a different direction.
Well, I mean, it's partisan politics, so I'm not surprised by anyone's wild inconsistencies anymore. But
and look, and I'll hammer the Democrats for it. The same Democrats who were during impeachment, you don't have to go farther than Clinton. The same people who were making arguments that are the mere opposites of the arguments that they're hoisting Trump on. I mean, take a position and be consistent. You either believed it back in 1998, 1999, and so I guess if you weren't alive or an adult, then you get a pass, or you believe what you're saying now. But you can't have two diametrically opposed ideas unless you're Justice Scalia saying that was then, this is now. It's partisan politics.
So just to summarize al-Baghdadi and Pelosi and Schiff not being told, there's an emotional component to it, which is you declared war on me, so screw you. I'm not telling you anything.
Right. And I think it's as simple as that. I really do. I don't think he thought for a second they were going to leak it. I don't think that they would have leaked it. I think it's as simple as, are you kidding me? You're trying to take me out and you think I'm going to tell you anything that you're going to. I mean, the leak wouldn't be that they were leaking it to ISIS. The leak would have been that he didn't get to do the press conference, I assume.
Right. No, I mean, there's also there's an element of what's in it for me. You know what I mean? Like, you already hate my guts anyway.
Right.
And there's a 2% chance it could get leaked. So why even bother? Like, I think there's that part, too. Like, you're right. You've declared war. What am I even going to do this for? And by the way, you can't hate me any more than you already hate me. So it doesn't matter.
Right. You're trying to impeach me. That is the political equivalent of a put you down. I mean, like a dog. I mean, he talked a lot about declassifying dogs this week. That's what the impeachment is. He would be the one of less than a handful, literally, of people who have ever been impeached. And obviously, his legacy or his reputation is something that Trump values, you would think. And so, and this is a guy who has engaged in hardball, hard scrabble litigation his entire career.
All right, let me tease one for you. Folks on CNN and MSNBC have their panties in a bunch because he basically said he was a crying coward and he would kill them like a dog. He died like a dog and all that kind of stuff. Right. Very unstatesmanlike. Now, they make a big deal out of it. I don't know why they're not. They shouldn't be surprised. What else would you expect from Trump? I think when Trump does that, he's playing to his constituency. He's basically saying to every I'm a guy who likes that. Like, I don't like when things are sanitized. I like that we wasted that guy and he was a coward and he deserved to die and he'll be in hell. Like, I like that kind of talk. And my feeling is even if it's the president, I still like that kind of talk. It feels more satisfying because there is a bloodlust. I mean, we're going there's a reason we're looking to hunt the guy down and kill him. But and we have the Kimmel mashup, by the way, which we'll play in 1 second. First, I'll tell you, AIS, just another commercial, but you're going to want to listen to this one. I just met Mark and Susan from the auto insurance specialist, AIS. They sell car insurance with a twist. They have smart quote technology, compares the rates and coverages of lots of insurance companies. Then you pick your price. It doesn't get simpler than that. AIS saves its customers an average of $640 when they switch. Insurance rates are rising fast. You have to compare to save. The best way is to let AIS do the shopping for you. So give them a call, 800-777-4AIS, or you can grab them online at AISinsurance.com/doubt, AISinsurance.com/doubt. All right, let's play the very funny mashup between how President Obama at the time covered bin Laden's death and the words he chose and his measured speaking versus Trump.
By the way, when Obama went on TV to announce that they'd killed bin Laden, he spoke for 9.5 minutes. Trump yesterday did 48 minutes on this. And for further comparison, we thought it might be fun to match up Trump's speech about al-Baghdadi with Obama's about bin Laden. And we were right. It was.
The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead.
The United States launched a targeted operation against that compound.
They did a lot of shooting, and they did a lot of blasting, even not going through the front door. You know, you think you go through the door. If you're a normal person, you say, knock, knock, may I come in?
After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
He died like a dog.
But his death does not mark the end of our effort.
A beautiful dog. A powerful dog.
We give thanks for the men who carried out this operation.
And I don't get any credit for this, but that's okay. I never do. But here we are.
May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
And I'm writing a book. I think I wrote 12 books. All did very well.
Yeah, I love it.
Now, it's Jimmy, as I look, you've known Jimmy longer than almost anybody professionally, right?
Sure.
Has he just gone into the stratosphere of a new level that is just unreal? I mean, he's so funny, I can't tell you. He just cracks me up like nothing. I've watched him evolve over the years from the K-Rock days on.
Yeah, well, he's doing what smart people do and people who really take their profession and their craft seriously. I don't think it would be much different for a woodworker if you caught him 25 years ago or you, if we caught you 25 years ago. You know, you keep moving, you keep evolving, you keep, you know, to me, it's the reason you become a comedian versus work at a postal sorting center. You know what I mean? There's nothing right to do. There's nowhere to go. I mean, all you could go, you can go from working on the floor to junior manager, but you're still doing the same thing, you know? And
so, you know, it's an interesting. So as you, in that contrast there, and this goes, you liked hearing the Trump, the kind of unvarnished now, and you said that's for his audience. And that's interesting. Now, when Obama makes his speech, which makes us feel more solemn, right?
Right.
I mean, Trump has got a stand-up act.
Right.
I mean, this is,
right.
I don't care what anybody says. If you go back to Rodney Dangerfield, I mean, he almost did a Dangerfield line there.
Right.
I don't get any respect. I never get any respect. He'll never give me any credit. Right?
No, he is. He's the Rodney Dangerfield of presidents. That's very smart. That's exactly who he is.
Yeah, hey, he's got that routine down. And so I wonder, you know, the you say with Obama, okay, he didn't do the victory dance or the lap, and it was very solemn and it was very presidential. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, that's not going to make enemies or it's not going to radicalize people. But that was what year? That wasn't that 5-6 years ago?
I remember it was the White House correspondence dinner that he was attending when it was going down or right before it went down. So whatever that date was for the White House correspondence.
Right. So certainly being solemn and presidential didn't damp down the radicalization of various segments of the targets over there. So is Trump's, do his supporters say, well, this is great. He's mocking the guy, died like a dog, making him look like he's a whimpering coward. And is that going to inflame people? I think that's all, you know, I think you've got a perfect bookends here to the fact that none of it really matters on either side.
No, it does. You're not going to cause more or diminish there's nothing, there's no effect. It's a personal thing. Bin Laden, May 2nd, 2011.
Wow.
But here's
8 years ago.
Here's the question for you, Mark. And I'm starting to think about this on just slightly more visceral or emotional terms. I have friends, many friends, and there's many people. Trump drives them insane because he talks this way. He doesn't have that effect on me. It doesn't drive me insane. I sort of look at it as entertaining. that he talks his way. Now, you can make arguments for many other things he does that you disagree with, but it's most of the people I know can't stand the arrogance. And when you hear a lot of people on MSNBC or CNN, they're talking about what he's promoting or what he's getting people to do or whatever it is. But what's really affecting them is the way he speaks. Unpresidential, undignified, very plain, very sort of blue collar, little bit of Rodney Dangerfield mixed in. And so you have a choice. It can either drive you insane and anger you, or you can kind of find it amusing, because like something like this press conference, this isn't a policy. This isn't sanctions against China. This isn't tariffs. This isn't anything. This is just, I'm announcing a guy died, or we killed a guy. One way to do it is presidential and dignified. The other way to do it is to do it like Joe Sixpack. He does it like Joe Sixpack. That drives half the nation insane and the other half loves it. So what's the difference between these two? You know, Bill Maher's a comedian. I'm a comedian. It drives Bill Maher insane. It amuses me. And I think it amuses you, too.
Some of his, it does, because some of these rallies, how can you, I mean, from my standpoint, I know he gets these people fired up there, but I think that there's some, at some level, people understand that it's total entertainment. I mean, after all, he spent 12 years as a reality show star, and it strikes me, at least, that it's entertaining in a perverse way, I suppose. But there's Rodney Dangerfield meets Henny Youngman in the one-liners, and then he does, you know, that Peter and Lisa routine of his. If you can't laugh at that, even if you despise the guy, you know what I mean? Well, where he talks about Peter Strzok and Lisa, and they're doing, and he almost has, he's like feigning an orgasm as he's doing right. The rally. I mean, if that isn't some perverse entertainment, I don't know what is.
Well, let me posit this thought. I'm looking at Gary as well.
Yes, sir.
Anyone who knows or who has seen Bill Maher in action, or seen a guest on his show, or seen a guest challenge him, or sort of make fun of when he got thrown off the air from doing politically correct, commenting on 9/11, knows that he's very thin-skinned and he's very prickly. He makes tons of jokes, but if you ever challenge him or bust his chops, in other words, roast him a little bit, he's very quick to anger, and he doesn't have any sense of humor about it at all. If you watch that show, once in a blue moon, someone will come in and bust his chops about something, and he doesn't take it well at all. Mark Garagos is the king of chop busting. And you can say whatever you want about Mark Garagos, and you laugh it off. As you're banned from your own hotel. So,
and you know what? You know what? You've hit Bill on the. I mean, Bill has got, and there is a certain portion of the left that has no sense of humor. You know what I mean? I mean, here's
well,
a comedian.
Well, no, they have a great sense of humor, but no sense of humor about themselves.
Selves, right.
Okay.
Self-deprecation is not a
right.
trait that comes to
now,
I mean, it's the.
If you internalized all the horrible things that were said about you on a daily basis, and I internalized or felt I needed to fend off or defend or whatever all the horrible things that are said about me on a daily basis, we would both just crawl inside a barrel of Don Julio in
exactly.
a fetal position
exactly.
all day.
Exactly.
You couldn't leave the house.
All day.
Okay. So my
that's my expression. How, if I was concerned about that, how would I get out of bed in the morning?
You couldn't. So here's my point. You and I don't have that wiring. We don't have that thin skin. I don't even want to call it good or bad, but we just don't have that wiring. So when we hear Trump speak, we're not affected like Bill Maher's affected or many others. Right. Does that sound
I
correct?
I think that's a fair statement. Now, there's a downside to it. I'll be self-deprecatory. I sometimes then, and my Tenny will tell me this, she'll say, "Dad, you're being a jerk." And I will think I'm having fun. But she will tell me, no, that you're being a jerk because I've got that blind spot there. I think it's entertainment. How could somebody else be so offended by something I'm talking about? I mean, I can think of one example, and I won't relitigate it here on Reasonable Doubt, but I did it last week and I hurt somebody's feelings and I apologized. And I never at the time thought it was happening, never saw it. It had to be explained to me. And I said, oh, well, that never would have occurred to me. If somebody had said it about me, I would have laughed, but I get it. I understand. And I think your characterization of it, we're just not wired that way. That's part of, it's a blessing and a curse.
I literally just was spoken to yesterday about making fun of my son on stage when I do stand up and on shows where he goes to the show with me and he sits in the green room and the first 10 minutes are what a loser he is. And I was probably gay. And somebody said, you know, he may not like that. And I said, he's in the green room. He's eating surf and turf. He's fine. And I literally said,
what did you say back?
I said, I think Sonny's wired like me because he busts my chops all day long and I bust his chops. But you're right. I have never asked him if it bothered him, like me making fun of him and making gay jokes about him at the top of my show. So
it's so funny you say that because, look, Sonny's how old now?
He's 13.
13. Okay. Jake is 26. Night before last, I was in Jake's apartment and his buddies Paul and Tay were there. And I had walked in and Tay and he were sleeping in the bed. And I said, oh, how gay. And then something about where you dropped on your head again. And he says, you know, Dad, other sons might be offended that their entire life you asked them, their fathers asked them if you were dropped on your head. And
I know.
That was the, I forgot.
So I did this thing where it's like, Sonny doesn't care about any of this stuff because he's got a good sense of humor and he knows what I do, but I get it. I'll ask him just to tell you.
So
I
did you ask him?
Yeah. Last night he was eating dinner. And I said, like, you know, I make jokes about you and being gay and stuff like that. And you know about it. Do you have feelings about it? And he's like, nah, I get it. That's what you do. He tells his friends at school and they have a laugh about it. And he basically says half my act is about what a loser he is when it's really only like it's 35%, maybe 40% max. No, it's 4 minutes, but he totally gets it. And then later on, just to kind of prove my point, I brought up the SNL did a cold open and Chance the Rapper was doing a thing where he said, like,
oh, yeah,
I like the second best. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel's OK, but I love Adam Carolla because I love the second best. And so then Sonny says to me, hey, you're second best. How's that feel? And I said, if I'm second best, then you're third best because you're behind me. So you're the loser. And it went off.
I thought you were going to go with he's behind Natalia, so he's second best there too.
No, he announced Natalia was in fourth place. All right. So our wiring. So we have a wiring that is not driven insane by Trump, which is disagree with policies, tariffs and whatnot, but not driven insane. Bill Maher's driven insane, and many women are driven insane. And I think in general, women don't have the ball buster quality. They don't have the chops. They have the ball buster, not the chop buster. So guys grow up busting chops. And so maybe by and large, to me, it's the chicks that have a bigger problem because they didn't grow up getting their chops busted. And then, of course, the dudes like Adam Schiff were wired like chicks. Yes?
I was just going to segue into Limetown.
Go ahead.
Facebook Watch presents Limetown. You know what this is? It's a new show, and it's amazing. It follows the mysterious disappearance of over 300 men, women, and children, all without a trace. In the 15 years since
Not a single survivor has been located. It's amazing. Stars Jessica Biel as an investigative reporter who goes searching for answers. She unravels the unsettling truth behind the disappearance. Stream now only on Facebook Watch.
Love it. All right, let's see. You can go to adamcarolla.com and find out where I'm going. I'm doing live shows everywhere. And you can check out nosafespaces.com. We're spreading out throughout the nation, and the movie's really taking off.
Second highest grossing documentary I read?
Yes. Yeah, in history, single screen. That's just for the opening.
Well, the single screen is incredible. Wasn't it over 22,000?
It was like 40-something thousand.
Yeah, so exactly. That's amazing.
We'll take it, and you can subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Adam Carolla for all the free comedy. What do you got, Mark?
I've got Prova Pizzeria in Grand Central Terminal and in Times Square in the Moxie Hotel. I've got the Capri Southampton still open. V Palm Springs, this is the starting to get into high season. Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, downtown Engine Company 28, and at LAX and 10E Mediterranean Tapas downtown.
And you can check out Court Junkie Podcast on Podcast One or Apple as well. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Carolla Digital.